you, like an insect in the path of a fire. The ring will draw the fire instead. Absorb it like water dashed across the sand, instead of swelling up to drown you. And you, little Demji, you can live. It still felt like a trick. I knew enough stories of the gene to know that if it seemed too good to be true, then it probably was. But it was too late to stop the jump of hope in my chest that came with his words. And as I stared at the ring, I could feel the hope seducing me. I thought of being an Aramot with Zaheer, the way he had simply touched the Abdals and their light went out. It had been like watching their spark get sucked into a greater fire. I remembered how he had reached out a hand and Ashra's wall had shattered harmlessly. He had some power over genie fire that I didn't understand. And Zaheer was right. I didn't want to die. It didn't matter how far I'd come across the desert. A part of me would always be that selfish girl from Dustwalk, bent on surviving. My hand closed around the ring, and then suddenly, like a shadow disappearing into the night, Zaheer was gone. And I was holding my salvation in my hand. Chapter 36. It didn't take me long to find Jin. He was on the edge of camp where he'd pitched his tent, as far as he could get from Ahmed without giving himself over to the desert completely. His eyes were closed, and a bottle of something dangled loosely in his fingers. He didn't hear me, or if he did, he didn't care. He didn't even look up when I sank down next to him. His head tipped back against the side of his tent, eyes closed. So, are you planning on finishing the whole bottle, or are you going to share? His eyes snapped open. A long silence stretched between us as I turned my head so that our gazes met. Until he finally handed me the liquor. I took a swig and made a face.
You couldn't find something better?
2 weeks in Ilias, and you're suddenly an expert in fine wines?
His tone was light, but his eyes never left me, looking for answers to why I was here.
I'm just saying.
I took another swig.
I know we've got something better than this around here.
Yeah, well, the good liquor is being saved to drink to victory tomorrow.
Jin pried the bottle out of my hands, taking a swig. I read a whole lot in that silence, that there wasn't going to be a tomorrow for a whole lot of people. But we were all acting like this might not be our last night alive, and now that included me.
So, blue-eyed bandit.
He didn't look at me when he spoke again.
Did you just come to torture me? Or is there another reason you're here?
Why?
I challenged, watching him carefully, my blood racing in my ears. I knew what I'd come for. I just didn't know if I was ready to say it yet.
You don't want me here?
You already know what I want, Amani.
Jin's voice, carving out my name, was low and rough with feeling, and it shattered the last of my pretense, sinking a hook into my chest and pulling me toward him. We'd kissed 100 times before, but this felt different somehow. This felt like the first time, all over again, when he'd pinned me up against the side of a train carriage that shook around us, like it might fall apart at any second, as we clung to the only other thing in the world that seemed sturdy, both of us on that train, rushing ahead into something we didn't wholly understand. When everything in me had seemed to come alive under his hands, when he turned me from a spark into a fire, and I didn't know how anyone could have enough power to do that to me. My lips grazed his just slightly, like a match, seeing if it would strike. He tasted like cheap liquor and gunpowder and desert dust and somehow still of salt air, That first kiss, and every kiss since, hung between us. The desperate ones, the angry ones, the joyful ones. And now this one, a whisper of my mouth over his, a question. We might all be dead tomorrow, but we might not. And right now, we were alive. I've decided, I said, my mouth against his, that I'm not going to die tomorrow. I reckoned you might be interested in knowing that.
It was a fragment of a story, of what had passed between me and Zaheer in the desert, but it was enough, for now. And I felt him exhale, like some great weight had been lifted off him,
a second before his arms went around me. They circled me completely, crushing me to him as his mouth claimed mine. The match caught between us, and we turned from kindling into an inferno.
The bottle fell out of my hands, spilling the wine into the sand.
I was lost in him. I didn't know how I could have made any other choice but him. It would have been impossible.
I slid my hands under his shirt, across his back, up his spine.
I anchored him to me, my fingers digging into his bare skin. I didn't just want him. I needed him. He stood suddenly, barely breaking the kiss, our bodies clinging together, his grip tight enough that he lifted me up with him easily. Sometimes I forgot how strong Jin was. It was a few staggering steps, but my feet barely touched the ground as we moved. I was dimly aware we were at the entrance of his tent as canvas hit my back. My feet found the ground long enough to stumble inside. My head bumped something. A hanging lamp. We broke apart as I cursed. Jin laughed, rubbing the spot at the back of my head.
Are you all right?
Fine. My breathing was shallow. I was very aware that we were alone together in such a small space.
You're very graceful. It's one of the things I love about you, Bandit.
He reached past me, steadying the lamp I'd struck, releasing me just for a second, just long enough to set a match to the small amount of oil left in the light. The tent was filled with a warm glow, and I could see him now, more clearly than in the dark of the desert, the faint stubble on the planes of his cheeks, the way his dark hair fell into his dark eyes, the way his broad shoulders rose and fell in his white shirt when he breathed, revealing his tattoo. We'd known each other long enough that I was used to him now, but in this moment, it was like I was seeing him for the first time again, fascinated by him without entirely knowing why. When his hands came back to me, they were gentler, pushing my hair away from my face so that he could look at me.
God above, you're beautiful, he breathed.
You don't believe in God, I reminded him, my voice low.
Right now, I think I just might.
I needed more of him. I slid my hands under the hem of his shirt, pushing it up. He shifted obligingly and tried to lift it over his head, but the tent's ceiling was too low. He dropped to his knees, pulling me down with him. His shirt came off in one smooth motion, and he discarded it to one side. I had seen Jin half undressed 100 times, but everything felt different now, and for the first time since that day in the store in Dust Walk, I was keenly aware of how much of him there was. He was a whole kingdom of bare skin and ink under my hands. I leaned close to him, tracing the outline of the sun over his heart. I felt the ragged exhale of breath into my hair as I did. He lifted my face up and kissed me again, curling his fingers into the fabric of my shirt. Neither of us spoke, as his hands ran the length of my sides, pushing the cloth up. My stomach rose and fell under his calloused thumbs. His fingers grazed my ribs one by one. My breathing came harder as his thumbs brushed higher, and then in one quick motion, a break in our kiss, my shirt was over my head, away from my skin, landing in a tangled pile with his. and there was nothing between my skin and his hands. I suddenly felt shy, intimidated by the certainty of that movement. "You've done this before." I tried to keep my tone light, joking, but it was too late for that. The skin of his stomach was pressed to mine as we breathed. There was nothing left between us. No lies or pretense or secrets.
"Yes,"
he said seriously. He traced a scar on my shoulder with his thumb, one of the places my aunt had cut the iron out of me. He was being careful. Careful not to cross any lines I didn't want crossed. He met my eyes steadily, like he did when we stood in Ahmed's tent planning something, or in a fight, checking what the other one was doing as we moved together. His dark gaze was serious.
"Does that bother you?"
I wasn't sure whether it did or not. That there had been other girls before me. Girls who were better at this than I was. Jin had worn my sharper edges smooth in the year since we met, but now I felt them there, still under my skin, holding me back from him just a moment longer. "Does it bother you that I haven't?" He let out a short huff of air, a relieved laugh that tangled into my hair.
"No."
His thumb had moved away from the scar on my shoulder now, and it ran the length of my jaw, mapping it out like I was uncertain territory.
"But if you don't..."
He cut himself off, like he was picking the right words.
"I meant what I said about saving the good liquor. I'm planning on surviving tomorrow."
He pressed his mouth to the dip in my throat.
"And now I'm planning on you surviving, too. We don't have to do anything tonight. This isn't our last night. You and I, we're going to get tomorrow and the next night and 1,000 nights after that. For now, it can be enough that I am yours."
He kissed me gently.
"All that I am, I give to you. And all that I have is yours. Because the day that we die, it's not going to be tomorrow."
He said it with the certainty of a Demji truth-telling, even though he was entirely human. His calmness always tied me together, like he was holding me firm in a sandstorm. He was sure, I realized. He was sure that he wanted me, and I was sure that I wanted him. And it was more than a want. I leaned in, struggling to hold myself together inside my own skin, when I felt like I might shatter out of it if I touched him again. But I would break apart entirely if I didn't. I pressed a kiss against his mouth softly and felt him smile against me. "I'm yours," I offered back. I traced my mouth along the line of his jaw. "All that I am, I give to you." I dipped my head, my mouth exploring his collarbone and the lean, muscled line of his shoulder. "All that I have is yours." I felt his hand curl into a fist against my bare back, like he was grasping for something to hang on to anchor himself. But all he could find was skin. Finally, I leaned my mouth against the tattoo over his heart. "Until the day we die." Whatever thin barriers were left between us disappeared. I was keenly aware of everything as it happened, though later it only came back in flashes. Like I was drunk on him, on us together. I remembered some advice I once heard a mother give her daughter on her wedding day, back in Dustwalk. To lie back, close her eyes, bear it, and wait until it was over. But I didn't want to close my eyes. I wanted to see everything. Together we shed pieces of clothing until we were nothing but skin. his hands questioned when they were not sure. As he shifted over me, I caught sight of the ink that went across his hip bone, the tattoo I had only seen an edge of before, above the line of his belt. It was a star, I realized. A small circle bursting with light on all sides, like it was breaking apart. I drew the line of it with my finger. I heard Jin make a sound like I'd never heard before, as he pulled my attention back up with his mouth on mine. He kissed me deeply, until I heard myself saying his name over and over in my shallow breaths, like a plea or a prayer. He whispered my name back to me against my lips, like a secret that belonged to him. My breath came in small, ragged gasps, and I sank my fingers into his back. We were burning together as one single flame, bright enough that we could defy the night. Until finally the last of the space between our bodies vanished. I came apart in his hands and he in mine, both of us shattering into sand and dust and sparks, until we were both just infinite stars tangled together in the night. Chapter 37 The Demji and the Prince. Once there was a boy from the sea who fell in love with a girl from the desert. The boy knew she was dangerous when he met her, with a gun in her hand and no care for her own life in a dusty desert town at the end of the world. She was all fire and gunpowder, and her finger was always on a trigger. He guessed he was in trouble when those same fingers danced across the stories inked into his skin, without seeming to understand how much power she had in her, or how much power she could have over him. He knew it for sure when he woke up with a headache, missing the girl, and found that he was glad she had given him an excuse to go after her. He knew it when she drove him across the desert for fear that losing her would tear him in half. He knew it when he did lose her, and he would have torn the whole world apart looking for her. But he wondered if a boy from the sea and a girl from the desert could ever survive together. He feared that she might burn him alive, or that he might drown her. Until finally he stopped fighting it, and set himself on fire for her. Chapter 38 Something was wrong. I woke suddenly, completely certain of that. Only my waking mind wasn't as sure as my sleeping mind had been. And for just a few seconds, it didn't seem like anything could be amiss. I was lying in the circle of Jin's arms, fitted against him like we were two pieces meant to fit together. There was a heavy blanket between me and the morning air that I remembered Jin pulling over us last night. My head rested on the tattoo over his heart, listening to its steady beat as he drew lazy patterns with his fingers across the bare skin of my back, underneath the blanket. And then I remembered that today was the day we were all going into battle. Jin felt me wake up.
"What's wrong?" he mumbled tiredly into my hair.
I lifted my head enough so I could see him. His lids were heavy with sleep, his hair disheveled, but his eyes were as sharp and ready as ever, watching me. I wondered how long he'd been awake. "I'm not sure," I said. But even now I couldn't shake it. It was there, an unsettled feeling in the pit of my stomach, like there was some danger coming that I couldn't see yet. I sat up abruptly and smacked my head against the lamp, the same one from last night. I cursed, rubbing my head, as Jin laughed from where he was still sprawled lazily on the ground.
"You've got a new enemy. The Sultan and his army will have to wait until you've defeated that lamp."
I stuck my tongue out as I pulled the blanket off him, wrapping it around myself like I'd just stepped out of the baths in Isman, before venturing outside the tent. Dawn was only just putting on its face, the faint pink of the sky, igniting Isman to the east of us. But even in the half-light, I could see there was something else between us and the city. I squinted, trying to get a better view of the shifting, blurred thing on the horizon. It almost looked like... It hit me all at once. That feeling of wrongness wasn't just fear. It was coming from my Demji side. I pushed my way hurriedly back into Jin's tent. He looked up from where he was pulling clothes on. "It's a sandstorm," I said, suddenly breathless. I started searching for my own clothes. "The Sultan! He knows we're here!" I found my trousers, pulling them on quickly under the blanket. "He's using the Abdals to... He's doing this to keep me here!" I grabbed my shirt out of the pile, hands shaking. I could already anticipate the pain of trying to hold back a sandstorm long enough to make it a fair fight. I knew I couldn't hold it back and get into the city. I yanked my shirt on. Jin pulled me to him.
"Calm down."
His steadiness made me still.
"We have armies and other Demji. You're not alone in this fight. However..."
He hooked his hands under the hem of the shirt I had just pulled on.
"I am going to need my shirt back, because I don't think I'm going to fit in yours."
I just had time to realize he was right. I'd pulled on his shirt without noticing, and I was drowning in it. Before he stole a quick kiss from me and pulled the shirt back over my head, tossing me mine instead. It was a lot harder to believe you might lose a war when you could still laugh on the morning of the last battle. I stepped out of Jin's tent just as the storm reached us. I took in a breath as sand rushed closer, encircling the camp, pushing toward the tents. I raised my arms, hands steady as the storm got close enough that I could feel the sands lashing at my skin. I pushed back with everything I had in me. The storm stopped its invasion all at once. Sand strained against me at the edges of the camp. The desert that usually obeyed me was fighting back. I couldn't get it to disperse, couldn't wave a hand and scatter the storm back into the dunes where it had come from. Instead, the sandstorm whipped around the camp in a cyclone, like a wild animal prowling on the outskirts of a cage, nipping occasionally at the edges of tents, making them tremble in the air. This was a standstill. "God, there you are!" I opened my eyes at the sound of Shahzad's voice to find her, Ahmed, Rahim, and Sam running toward me, all of them looking unsettled as the storm raged around us. "I tried to find you when I saw the sandstorm, but I couldn't track you down." Shahzad's eyes slid to Jin, standing in the opening of his tent just behind me. We both still looked disheveled from more than just sleep. The sly look on my friend's face told me she understood now she'd been looking in the wrong tent. But her mind slid quickly back to the present. "Amani, how long can you hold this?"
"I don't know."
Not as long as the Abdals could, that was for sure. I was already starting to feel the strain, the risk of the wild storm slipping its leash and tearing through the camp. And the power controlling it on the other side came from machines. I was only flesh and blood.
"What do we do?"
I asked, breathless. I needed to go to the palace. That was the plan. I had to deactivate the machine. If I didn't, we would be helpless against the Sultan's metal soldiers. But if I left, the sand would rush in and drown us, and it would all be over.
"I'm not sure," Shahzad said, watching the sand circling us. We all stared at her, even as I could feel my knees threatening to give out. Sam spoke first.
"Did she just say she's not sure? Or am I hallucinating?"
"I'm thinking..."
Shahzad's voice was still level. I could see it going through her mind, the cost-benefit analysis of what was likely to get the fewest people killed.
It shouldn't be her decision to make. And it wasn't. It was Ahmed's.
Amani needs to go to the palace,
he said, taking the decision away from her.
My father is obviously doing this to keep her here, which means he's afraid of what will happen if Amani does get to the machine.
People will die. One of my knees buckled, and suddenly Jin was behind me, steadying me. My arms were shaking. No matter what we decided, the reality of my failing power might decide for us. But I wasn't giving up that easy. You can't fight in a sandstorm. I could feel the power of it pressing against me, threatening to swallow the camp whole.
And we can't fight at all, so long as the Sultan has this power to wield against us,
Ahmed said.
The plan remains unchanged. Now, if everyone can...
The sensation hit me so suddenly that I doubled over. It wasn't the pain I normally felt when using my powers. It was more like a sudden blow. Power suddenly slamming into mine, knocking the storm out of my hands. I lost control. Whatever Ahmed was going to say was lost in the rush of the sandstorm. I braced myself against Jin, my body radiating pain, as I waited for the sand to swarm in, to consume us. But that didn't happen. Instead, the sand rose, spiraling far up into the air, up toward the clouds. For a moment it hung over us like a huge, dark cloud, blotting out the sky, a swirling mass that could easily crash down and crush us all. I started to reach for it again, even though I knew it was hopeless. And then suddenly, the sand scattered through the air, falling harmlessly like rain around us. "What's happening?" I gasped, pulling up my Shima to shield my eyes from the sand. The others were doing the same. All except Sam.
I think...
His eyes were turned westward. The rest of us followed his gaze. There on the horizon stood row upon row of green uniforms.
It's the Albish Army.
Chapter 39. It was far from the whole Albish army, a dozen men out of hundreds. But a dozen men wielding powers were better than nothing.
Captain Westcroft.
We met him at the edge of the camp as he marched, leading what remained of the men we'd seen in Ilyaz. The young soldiers behind him looked battered.
We figured you'd been annihilated. Many of us were.
The captain nodded gravely.
But I thought it prudent to keep some of our soldiers separate from the Galen.
They're Dimji. They might have forged an alliance with the Galen, but hundreds of years of prejudice didn't disappear just because two regents had signed some paper far away. The Galen thought all magic was the work of the Destroyer of Worlds. The Albish had a different kind of faith.
We were luckier than most of my men.
The captain looked sad, tugging on the ends of his mustache.
And now it seems like you could use some cavalry, so to speak.
Ahmed considered the foreign man. I knew what he was thinking. Allying with foreigners had been the beginning of his father's rule as well. It had been the start of us handing the country over to the Galen and their greater force. We could not make that mistake again.
We will happily accept, Ahmed said finally, provided you can follow orders from my general.
He nodded to Shahzad. He wouldn't make his father's mistakes. If he could make them pledge themselves to us, not as allies, but as those who would obey, then we could do this. I could see her already tensing, ready for the raised eyebrows that came with her being a woman. But Captain Westcroft just nodded.
If we can take our orders from our queen, then I'm sure we can manage that. After all, she does outrank me if she is indeed your general.
Shahzad's brain worked fast, unsnarling everything into the smooth fabric of a plan. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Sam and I were ready all too quickly. We didn't need much, a few weapons, is in the shape of a huge rock, for the Albish to direct a little bit of cover my way, for me to stay alive to the end. Suddenly we were standing in a circle, all of us keenly aware that this might be the last time any of us saw one another alive. This is it? I checked my gun for the 100th time.
It seems like someone ought to make a speech or something, Iz said, wearing only a blanket, ready to shapeshift for us. Something suitably heroic,
Maz agreed with his brother. Around us, the noise of the camp getting ready for battle reigned. Men and women arming themselves, rushing into position to face the Sultan's men and machines. Orders were shouted down the lines to the rhythm of guns snapping into place against uniforms. A few prayers were going up. Our people would fight on the defensive until Sam and I could bring the wall down, and the Albish would provide a sandstorm. They might not be able to control our desert, but they could control the winds enough for it to look like I was still with Ahmed's army as it closed in on the city.
Speeches are best saved for the dead.
Shahzad spoke up. She'd been unusually quiet.
That's what my father used to say, at least.
I embraced Ahmed, then Rahim, both of them whispering a prayer of good luck in my ear. I turned to Jin. There was nothing either of us could say now that we hadn't said last night. He just ran a thumb along the line of my jaw.
I'll see you again, Bandit,
he promised before kissing me. Shahzad embraced me last. Bring each other home safe, she said finally, before letting me go and looking at Sam. His mouth pulled up at the side, and I recognized the prelude to a joke. Some gallows humor before we all headed off to try our hardest to stay alive, to see another dawn, like the one rising behind us now. But before he could say anything, Shahzad grabbed the front of his shirt and yanked him toward her abruptly, kissing him squarely on the mouth. And suddenly everyone else was looking at their feet, or at the sky, or just about anything that wasn't Sam and Shahzad. That was one way to shut him up. Finally, the two of them broke apart.
Well, Sam said, looking flushed and unbearably pleased with himself as he riffled his hands through his hair. That's one hell of a motivation to come back alive.
We climbed on Iz's back, and in a few quick movements, we were catapulted above the approaching army toward the city. Iz flew over the dome of fire, spreading huge blue wings wide as he soared over the rooftops, leaving the battle behind. We landed a little way from Oman's gate, the easternmost entrance to the city. When we'd left through the tunnels, there had been a gallant army in our way. Now there was nothing but blackened sand. I stood in front of the gates a little way back, careful not to touch the fire. Did I have anything left in me? If I didn't, we'd have to dig our way in. I drew my power to me, pulling it together between my hands as I pressed them in front of me, before splitting them open in one violent gesture that sent me to my knees in agony. The sand parted, scattering away from the huge gate, and sure enough, there underneath was one of the bricked-up tunnels. Sam stepped into it, and sand cascaded down as I released my power, breathing hard. Cautiously, he pushed his foot through the hard stone before pulling it back, like dipping a toe in water to test it. He turned toward where I was standing, still on steady desert ground, extending one hand to me.
"Shall we?"
he asked, like we were headed into a party and not a death trap. I took his hand, stepping down onto the top of the tunnel with him. He pulled me to him like we were going to dance. Suddenly, the solid stone below our feet started to give. I felt the soles of our boots slip through, slowly at first. Then we started to drop. Fast. I just had time to hold my breath and shut my eyes before we plunged through the roof of the tunnel like a pair of stones sinking through the water. We hit the ground hard in a heap. Sam grunted loudly below me as my elbow caught him in the stomach. I untangled myself, rolling away from him. It was dark and cool down here. The only light was above us, a long, narrow metal wire that was incandescent with genie fire, feeding the wall from the palace. But it wasn't much to see by. I didn't know how long we walked for. We moved as quickly as we could through the tunnel, aware that every moment we wasted here was another moment our people were on the defensive on the battlefield. Sam was faster than I was. He was running ahead, his blonde hair glowing dimly in the light, when suddenly he stumbled, sprawling into the dark. I caught up with him in a few short steps as he picked himself back up. "Are you all right?"
"I tripped," Sam said.
He groped around for a moment in the dark before his hand closed on something, and he held it up to the light. It was a gleaming bronze face. I drew back without meaning to. An Up doll. Or part of one. The eyes were blank and sightless. It was just a piece of a machine, I reminded myself. It was nothing without the spark of fire lighting it, without a word in the first language marked across it, giving it life. "We're under the palace," I said out loud. "We're close." I stretched my hand out backward, searching for the stone wall. It met hard metal instead. "The walls are lined with iron." When I said it out loud, my voice echoed against the metal unsettlingly. "Seems like the Sultan's been hard at work since we were last here." In the faint light of the wire, I saw Sam reach up and lay a hand flat against the stone ceiling. He could reach it, but just...
"So we're trapped," Sam said, too cheerily. "Excellent."
"Not trapped," I said. I nodded at the path marked out by the wire. "Just one way to go." We moved more carefully after that, picking our way forward in the dim light. The farther we went, the more discarded pieces of Abdal's there were. Bronze and clay hands and torsos. Early tests. Experiments that hadn't quite worked before Layla got it right. There was an articulated leg that reminded me of the one she had made for Tamid. And then there were those that looked almost whole. Metal men slumped on the floor like discarded dolls or tired soldiers. The light glanced eerily off one of them. "Sam!" I grabbed his arm, making him jump. "I think that one just moved!" Sam looked where I was pointing.
"A trick of the light," he said.
But he took hold of my hand all the same, leading me forward a little bit more quickly. I heard a small whirring sound as we passed another. "That wasn't a trick of the light," I said to Sam. And then the Abdal sat up. We staggered back as the thing started to drag itself to its feet, like a broken puppet being pulled up by its strings. We ran, bolting down the tunnel, following the wires. As we dashed past another metal body, it moved too, seeming to snap to attention. I stopped as we passed by another, pulling my knife out as I did. In one violent motion, I pried the bronze cover off the back of its foot and drove the knife through the word that gave it life. I tried to wrench the knife back out, but it was caught in the mess of gears and wires that lived under the Abdal's skin.
Amani!
I heard Sam say my name, and even as I looked up, I realized there was another Abdal coming toward us, blocking us off straight ahead. Sam had his gun out. 3 quick shots. But the thing didn't even falter. Instead, it raised its hands toward us in an inhuman imitation of Noorsham blessing his people back in Sazi. I could feel the heat swelling around it as it prepared to burn us. We turned to run the other way, to retreat. The light from the wire dashed across the gleam of bronze behind us. 2 more Abdals were closing in on us, slowly raising their hands. The heat around us was building. We were trapped. For once, Sam didn't have anything smart to say. I just felt his hand, looking for some comfort, his fingers squeezing mine. Something hard pressed against my knuckle. The ring that Zaheer had given me. The ring that was supposed to save me when I released Farish Day and turned the machine off. I thought of Zaheer back in Aramot, and the way he'd simply extinguished the Abdal's flame with a touch. His last gift was not meant for this, but the Abdals were getting closer, inching toward us, the heat building to an almost unbearable point. I wrenched my hand out of Sam's death grip, flinging it toward the wall instead. The glass smashed, and I felt a shockwave, an emptiness, a void, like a wind that swept up the fire of the Abdals and then snuffed them out, sucking all the air out of the space, smothering them. As one, they dropped like rag dolls falling to the ground. Sam stared at me.
What just happened?
It doesn't matter, I tried to say. Except that wasn't true. It did matter. I glanced down at the shattered ring in my hand. Now, whatever magic had been in that ring had fled, and I was left with nothing to face the sheer power of Farish Day. I had no way of freeing him except the words I had used to free Zaheer. But before I could answer Sam, I heard the sound of distant footsteps, of metallic feet scraping along stone. There were more, and they were coming. We weren't there yet. We have to go, I said. And then we were running again, bolting down the metal and stone corridor. We didn't make it far before we crashed into another wall. The end of the tunnel. The bright wire passed through a tiny gap, disappearing to the other side. To the machine. Our hands slammed into cold metal. Now I was sure I could hear noise behind us. The whirring of gears, and something that sounded terribly like the slap of metal feet. I banged my fist angrily against the metal. What do we do? I turned around, desperately looking at Sam. But he wasn't looking at me. His hand was flat against the ceiling. And then he was reaching through, the edge of his fingertips disappearing through the stone above us.
I can't reach that, he said. But I think I can get you through.
I blinked at him for a moment, not understanding. He could lift me through the stone, but he wouldn't be able to follow. No, I started to argue, but Sam was one step ahead of me.
You have to go,
Sam said urgently. He grabbed my arms in a gesture that seemed like something he'd read about in storybooks.
There's no time to argue. One of us has to make it out of this alive,
he declared dramatically. He really did sound ridiculous, even when he was about to throw himself at death. Shahzad, I heard myself say. Shahzad had told us to bring each other back, not for him to save me, for us to save each other. Sam's mouth pulled up a little on the side.
Didn't I tell you?
He forced a broad smile.
All the greatest love stories end like this.
I could feel the last moments slipping through my fingers,
before death came for us. I couldn't just leave him, but I couldn't find the words either. Sam, I flung my arms around him, like we'd stood when he pulled me through the wall to the Sinmaker, like we might be going through the wall together again, even though this time he wasn't coming with me. I'm sorry. It was the only thing I could find to say as I embraced him. I'm sorry that I drew you into this. I'm sorry I led you here. I'm sorry you're here with me. I'm sorry that it ends here. Sam tightened his arms around me. I felt the solidity of him that would be dust in a few moments.
I'm not, he said as he pulled away.
And then he was on his knees in front of me, hands locked together, his back to the wall for balance. I could hear the sound of Abdal's getting closer. If I left him... But if I didn't, everyone died. Everyone out on that battlefield. Jin and Ahmed and Rahim and Delilah. Sam was laying down his life for us. I steadied myself on his shoulders, putting my boot on his linked hands, and Sam lifted me. I only just had time to hold my breath before my head met the stone. It gave way as Sam pushed me up, and suddenly I was halfway through, shoulders and arms above the stone ceiling. I braced my arms, pushing, yanking the rest of my body through the floor, even as Sam kept hold of me. And then I was on the other side, my legs pulling out of the tiles of the palace floor. I just had time to see the tips of Sam's fingers disappear. Chapter 40 The Once Nameless Boy. Once in a kingdom far across the sea, there was a boy born with no name. As a child at his mother's knee, he heard many stories of men from the great land where he was born who made names for themselves through prodigious acts of valor and heroism. And so, as he became a man, he began to search for a name of his own. Eventually, his quest took him far from the shores where he was born, to a desert where others like him had come from nothing and found names. It was there that he began to fight in the name of another man, a man who had many names. A prodigal prince, the rebel prince, the resurrected prince. It was in the name of this man that the nameless boy fell. Some might say that the boy's quest had failed, for he would forever be nameless in his own land. A pale girl he had once loved would think of him sometimes on a bright spring day in her cold stone castle, but she would never speak his name. A family in a small, dark cottage would mourn their lost son when the war ended and he did not come home. But none of them would ever know how his end came, and as years passed, they would wonder out loud about his fate less and less until they stopped altogether. And when they were gone, too, his name would never be spoken again in the land of his birth. No mothers would tell their sons and daughters his story as they held their children on their knees in front of the fireplace. No singers would compose odes to his deeds. And the queen of the kingdom across the sea would never know that a boy from her island met his end alone in the dark, fighting another ruler's war. But not so in the desert. In the land where he fell, they would speak his name around campfires, along with the other heroes of their country. Children would be told tales of his feats of heroism and clap their hands when they heard of his many tricks to fool the rebellion's enemies. And they would go quiet when the story came to how he died. Some would even shed tears. He would be remembered long after those who had known him joined him in death. In the desert, the boy would never be nameless again. Chapter 41 I was alone. Sprawled across the fine marble floor of the palace, I pressed down on the tiles like I might be able to tear them up and reach down for Sam, to drag him to safety with me. But it was too late. It was just me now, and the mosaic of Princess Hawa staring down at me from the wall. The first daughter of my father. The first girl to fall in love. The first girl to die for it. Sam's words from below the mountain in Sazi crept back to me when he first told me that all great love stories ended in death, and I felt a sob inch its way up my throat. I fought it down. There was no going back now. He had made his choice in those tunnels. I had too. I'd see him in death soon. My side ached with the strain of using my power as I dragged myself to my feet. I pressed my hand against Hawa's, silently calling on my sister through a thousand generations to help me. The door yielded below my hand, admitting me to the vaults. The first time I had come down here, it was too dark to see. Now the vaults blazed with light from the machine, so bright that I could barely see anything else. I shielded my eyes as I felt my way down the stairs. I thought I could hear voices calling out to me, the other Jean I had imprisoned here. But I couldn't make them out from one another over the whirring of the machine. I had to get close enough to it. As I reached the bottom of the stairs, I could scarcely see anymore. The light was too bright. Even when I closed my eyes, it seemed to burn. I scrambled for my Shima loose around my neck. It came free easily in my hands. I wrapped it around my head, covering my eyes twice, until the light didn't burn against my eyelids, knotting it at the back of my head. I extended one hand in front of me, moving forward slowly, carefully, trying to find my way blind. The whirring grew louder as I got closer, until I was close enough that I heard the swish of one of the blades of the great machine next to my skin. I drew back, dropping to my knees, feeling my way along the ground until I found the metal of the circle below my fingertips. I pressed my fingertips to the ground. I felt the jagged glass of the ring still on my hand scrape against the stone floor. Useless now. I remembered the rush of relief and hope and joy that had flooded me last night when I thought that I would get to live. I'd been so certain that I'd get to see more than one last dawn when I'd gone to Jin. Would he ever forgive me for going and dying on him after I'd told him that I wouldn't do that to him? I should have known better. We both should have. This was a war. If you didn't die in one fight, there was always another one that might get you. Zaheer's gift had saved my life and Sam's long enough for us to get to the next fight. For Sam to die in that one to save me, so that I could die in the one after that. That was what we did. Survive one fight to get to the next, over and over again, until you didn't survive. And all that you could hope for when dying was that some people wouldn't have to see another fight. That eventually, somewhere, this country would find peace. I couldn't wait. Every second I waited, others were out there losing this fight against the Abdals. I had to do it now. I said the words in a rush before I could lose my nerve. The same ones I had used to free Zaheer. I shouted them over the drone of the machine, my voice rising in angry defiance until I reached the last word, until I reached Farishday's name. And the whole world turned to light. Even through my blindfold, I could see the blazing white of immortal fire, and I could feel pressure all around my body, heat on my skin, a scream in my ears. Then the light vanished in a blink. The heat went with it. Left behind was a kaleidoscope of colors that I could see, even behind my blindfold. I scrambled to untie it, to see whatever it was that had stopped Farishday's freed soul from incinerating me. As I pulled it away, I started to make out colors in the glare, like pillars of blue, red, gold,
and a dozen other hues around the too violent fire that had once been Farishtay. I saw shapeless figures of flame encircling the machine, standing around it, caging it, shielding me from it, shielding the whole city from it. I realized suddenly that I was lying on my back and opening my eyes. The rushing sound in my ears was gone. Above me, dust was dancing in the air through the sunlight. I could taste metal. I pushed myself, shaking, onto my elbows. The light in the vaults was different now, not blinding white anymore. It was the familiar buttery color of early morning sun. The motes floating through the morning light, they were what was left of the machine. It hadn't just shattered. It was like the metal had turned back into dust of the mountain it was mined from. There was nothing left of Farishtay either. His soul had fled the prison Layla made for it. And maybe tonight it would inhabit the sky, along with every other dead Jean from the First War. The pillars of colored fire that had encircled the machine were gone, too. Where they had been stood a circle of Jean in the shape of men instead. They had saved me. They stood in somber silence with bowed heads, my father, Bahadur, among them. The ground beneath their feet was scorched black. I expected them to vanish the way Zaheer had in Sazi. Instead, one of them turned his head toward me, blazing gold eyes catching me in his sights.
"So," he said in an ancient voice, "Zaheer has sent an assassin after us."
As one, they turned toward me, and suddenly I was caught under a dozen immortal gazes. "I'm not..." Speaking was a struggle. I'd hit the ground hard and my lungs felt raw. "I'm not an assassin."
"And yet you bring weapons here,"
one of them said. He didn't move, but I felt the air stir under my hand, lifting it as if some invisible grip were guiding it. And I realized they were all staring at the now useless ring that Zaheer had given me.
"We made that weapon for Zaheer."
It was my father who spoke now.
"When we imprisoned him below the mountain, we gave him a promise of freedom if he would repent for what he did. But we gave him a second path to freedom, too, should he want it."
Another one of the Jean stepped in.
"We gave him that ring so that he could choose his own death if he wished to. If, in a moment of desperation, he should wish to escape, all he needed to do was break the ring and he would be released from life."
I understood in one perfectly clear moment. This had been what Zaheer had intended all along, to use me to exact revenge over those who had imprisoned him, to kill them in the same way they had given him to kill himself. He had given me a weapon that could end an immortal, and then sent me into their midst. He hadn't lied to me. It would have saved me. It would have taken Farishtay's energy away safely, as well as snuffed out the fire of every other genie here, as it had the Abdals, as it would have him, if he'd chosen to end his own immortal life. This had been his intention from the beginning. He had played a long game with me. He had given me a way to save Ahmed, but he knew I would never kill a prince with the knife. He had given me a way to save Bilal, but he knew I would be too late to use the kiss. And only then did he give me the ring to save myself. He had made me desperate enough, with one promised salvation after another, so that I would accept this last gift without question. Too close to the battle to wonder for very long about his generosity. To realize that he was sending me in against his old enemies, the Jean who had imprisoned him.
"She will need to be punished,"
the one with molten gold eyes said. I didn't know. I was breathing hard, and everything hurt. Slowly, I tried to drag